Good evening. Welcome to the Critical Hour. We are coming to you from the capital of the United States of America, Washington, D.C., here on Radio Sputnik. I'm your host, political scientist, author, and nationally syndicated columnist, Dr. Wilmer Leon. I'm joined here by my co-host, political analyst, Garland Nixon.
Thank you, Wilmer.
For the next 2 hours, we will explore and analyze the salient news stories that are impacting the global village in which we live. The Libertarian Institute has a piece entitled Dutch Prime Minister Says NATO Using Ukraine as Proxy Against Russia. Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte has called to equip Ukrainian forces with enough weapons and gear to defeat the Russian military, arguing that Kyiv must deal the blows as direct confrontation between NATO and Moscow is still off the table. What does this really signal? Well, for insight, let's turn to our first guest. He's a former CIA analyst and co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, Ray McGovern. As always, Ray, welcome back.
Thank you.
So, Root says, in terms of weaponry, we stand united here that it is crucial for Russia to lose the war, suggesting that Ukraine should serve as a conduit for Western arms in order to maximize pain inflicted on Moscow. And as we cannot have a direct confrontation between NATO troops and Russia, what we need to do is make sure that Ukraine can fight that war, that it has access to all the necessary weaponry. Well, this, Ray, says to me that NATO and the U.S., as we've said before, are all in until the last Ukrainian dies. But here's my question. This idea that it's crucial for Russia to lose the war, where does that come from? And why is that mindset so prevalent?
It's really hard to explain a naive statement such as the one that Root just made. Why Russia must lose the war? Well, you know, Russia's not going to lose the war. Russia, for good or ill, is now conquering the part of Ukraine that they had intended to conquer all along. They have proceeded on their twin aim of denazification and demilitarization. The only question in my mind is when they will stop. And that's where politicians like Root come in. If there's an endless supply of weaponry from the West, if the West continues to aid and abet Zelensky in his quixotic attempt to, quote, win, end quote, this war, then I think the Russians would be tempted to go all the way to Odessa. If there can be some common sense inflicted here, then I think the Russians would stop pretty much where they are now. The Dnieper River would constitute a ceasefire line pretty much. And there could be sensible talks so that the last Ukrainian wouldn't die because of our belligerency. When I say our belligerency, that's pretty much what exists now. And when you have people like NATO spokespeople and NATO prime ministers and presidents saying that we have to make sure that maximum pain is inflicted on Moscow, well, that ain't going to happen short of a high risk of nuclear war. I don't think that's what Root means. And so what we have to say is that this is either naivete or just plain ignorance.
Ray, here's what I think, you know, to get into the real world. I think the end of this conflict only comes a couple ways. One of them is that Russia achieves its military goals and says, okay, we're done. We got everything we want, and we're going to keep what land we took. I think that's a very real possibility. The other, of course, is some diplomatic political agreement, between the U.S. and the powers that be in Russia, which I don't see as a good possibility for a number of reasons that I could go on and on about. But here's the other part. At some point, I think we're more likely to see a political collapse of some type or military collapse in Ukraine, that at some point the level of losses, the level of pain that they're taking, that will cause either some kind of a coup or some kind of a military to collapse and say, look, we can't send any more people. Our people won't go. They're just rebelling. This thing is falling apart. What do you think about the possibility of some kind of a collapse or coup in the Ukrainian government or Ukrainian military where the U.S. doesn't have any really control over that thing that falls apart? At any rate, your thoughts on that, Ray?
Well, so far, the U.S. does have partial control over Zelensky. When I say partial control, the rest of the control comes from the Nazi elements that were put in place after the U.S.-sponsored coup in Kyiv on the 22nd of February 2014. So if you want to be sympathetic, you say Zelensky's between a rock and a hard place, the rock being the U.S., the hard place being the Nazis. He can't. He's not his own man. And so the question will be this. Russia, as I think we have established, considers Ukraine to be a threat, an existential threat to Russian national security. All that needs to happen is offensive strike missiles, what the Russians call them, going into Ukraine, and you have a completely new situation. They would be taken out very quickly. Is it an existential threat to Biden? Well, yeah, it is. Biden thinks in political terms. The midterm elections are coming up in November. He has to appear really, really strong. So yesterday he gave another $1.2 billion to Zelensky. Tomorrow maybe there'll be $1.3 billion of our tax dollars to Zelensky. So he's under pressure to do something that's really quixotic. Zelensky's not going to win. They are losing, by one estimate, 1,000 troops a day out there in the Donbass. So where's the hope? Well, the hope is that meanwhile, Europeans are suffering greatly from these sanctions that Biden calls Putin sanctions, but Europeans are beginning to call Biden sanctions. What do we mean? Well, the leaders of France, Germany, and Italy are talking with Zelensky today. They probably have finished their discussions given the time difference. So what are they saying to Zelensky? Fight on? And we'll give you lots more weapons, fight on. I don't know anymore. I hope not, for God's sake. Because if they do, it's really just going to creep up and destroy the rest of Ukraine. So maybe, just maybe, they insisted on this meeting to say, look, you know, the game's really up. Russia has achieved most of its objectives. Isn't it time to talk? I hope that's what comes out of this, but I'm not sure. And I certainly wouldn't bet a lot of money on it.
To your earlier statement, Biden announces $1 billion weapons package for Ukraine. He announced this yesterday after a call with Zelensky that the largest single-arms shipment will be provided since Russia intervened in February. Also, the United States is giving Ukraine an additional $225 million in humanitarian assistance. All of this while people in the United States are having to decide, do they fill up their gas, do they fill up their cars, or fill up their stomachs? But also, the White House has almost zero ability to track the weapons it's sending. So really, Ray, what we have here is a boondoggle for Raytheon and a boondoggle for the other arms manufacturers, and we are sowing the seeds for these weapons to fall into the wrong hands so that for many years to come, other battles can be fought, commercial airliners can be shot out of the sky, and people will be scratching their heads saying, where did these weapons come from?
Well, Wilmer, a lot of people are saying precisely these same things. And guess what? They're being called Putin apologists. They've been called, you're in Putin's pocket. No, this is reality. There were Congress people who tried to get provisions in this latest tranche of military and economic aid, that they be monitored, that they be accounted for, and they were defeated. So what we have is the gravy train again for Lockheed Martin, for Raytheon. These are people who are profiteering from the war when, as you point out, people like me, I filled up my gas tank today, used to cost $30, now it costs $60, okay? So you Americans are feeling that. But the question really is, how will Biden look at the midterms? Now, it's not just McGovern saying that. It's Vladimir Putin, who has said more than once that U.S. foreign and military policy is hostage, his word, is hostage to U.S. political events domestically, okay? Now, that's big because the midterms are coming up. It doesn't look very good for Biden and the Democrats. And so what can Putin expect? It doesn't matter what we expect. What can he expect? Well, I think he expects the worst, and he has to plan for the worst. So this would be an incentive for him to go farther, still farther, to take Odessa, to go into Transnistria. You know, it's really, really dumb not to stop him right now and to say, look, we're not going to fight anymore for the last Ukrainian. We're going to stop it, and we're going to get the best deal we can, given the lay of the land, given the facts on the ground.
You know, here's the thing, though. We're playing cards, and I got a royal flush, and you say, let's make a deal. I say, great, yeah, give me all your money. Because I'm taking it one way or the other. I got a royal flush and you got a two and a one-eyed jack. We know how this hand's going to end, right? So even right now, they've waited too long to make a deal with the Russians when the Russians are winning overwhelmingly and you're actually trying to avoid total destruction. The Russians are in a position to say, yeah, we'll make a deal with you. You will give us everything we want. Or no deal. And if you don't want to make a deal, fine, because we're going to get everything we want without a deal. So how do you, I'll put it like this, as far as a deal, what does Ukraine and its masters have to offer Russia now that they can't take by arms?
Before you answer, Ray, let me just quickly say, Garland, I think you're absolutely right. But I think Russia, with the exception of the denazification issue, they've already accomplished what they set out to accomplish. So you're right. And this is really along the lines of, I just remember my dad looking at me sometimes saying, son, how painful do you want this to be? Well, you know what, Dad? I think we can end this now. And
add this, I don't know if you've been paying attention to this, right? But the gas has been drying up here in Germany the last day or so. And anyway, Ray, we got about two minutes. Your go.
Well, Wilmer and Garland, we have to prioritize, I think, what Putin really wants and what he needs. He needs the kind of deal which will guarantee that people will not be shooting high-caliber artillery across the Dnieper River into eastern Ukraine. This is going to take some real negotiations. Whether they can happen before the midterms or not, probably not. There have been Russian spokespeople who say, look, this will go on to the end of the year for sure. Now, what happens at the end of the year? There'll be a new Congress. There'll be a lot of new people in Congress. How will they look at all this? Anybody's guess. So for the nonce, I think what Putin's priorities are were listed in his imploring for a telephone conversation with Biden on the 30th of December, 2021, last year. And this is what the Russian readout said. Joseph Biden emphasized, now listen to this, that Washington had no intention of deploying offensive strike weapons in Ukraine. Whoa, offensive strike missiles. So Biden promised Putin directly, one-on-one on the telephone, that Washington had no intention of deploying offensive strike weapons in Ukraine, as they have started to do in Romania and Poland. Now, if Putin can get satisfaction on this, and there can be a modicum of trust born of the fact that he has the high cards, then trust but verify. There would be doverai, no proverai. There would have to be an agreement to verify the fact that not only will no medium or intermediate range nuclear missiles go into Ukraine, but the ones that are starting to be put in Poland and the ones that are already completed, the sites, that is, to accommodate them in Romania, be destroyed. That's what he would be most interested in obtaining for the immediate term. Whatever happens is not going to in the broader picture, is not going to happen until after a new Congress comes in next January.
Ray McGovern, as always, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate that analysis, and we look forward to having you back.
Most welcome.
Folks, you're listening to The Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik. I'm Wilmer Leon. I'm joined here by my co-host, Garland Nixon. There's more on the other side. Stay tuned.